Today is December 24th, Christmas Eve, and this is Kathy bringing you the Danville Commercial News for the day. This first article, Musicians Provide Jingle and Jangle to Christmas Concert by Amy Graham McCarty. With seasonal flair and festive jingles, Doc Ashton and the Root Canals entertained a large crowd Sunday during the group's annual holiday concerts. For 21 years, the jazz ensemble, joined by talented instrumentalists from across the area, have entertained crowds with the sounds of the season. This year, the Northridge Middle School Red Pepper Jazz Band added their talent to the concert. Sunday, under the direction of music teacher Adam Owens, 10 students performed Deck in the Halls and Silent Night during the Big Bang concert. One talented brass player even had his community debut as a soloist. Roy Anderson, age 13, said his trumpet solo was stressful, but overall he felt good about his performance. Owen said he and Dr. Randall Ashton, the director of Doc Ashton and the Root Canals, thought of the idea of including the students over the summer. The group practiced hard to prepare for the concert. Owen said he's proud of the students' performance and the school's band has exciting things planned. The band has a very exciting spring competition season coming up, he said. We are also working on an outer space concert with the 8th grade advanced band and jazz band for the middle of May downtown. We're just waiting on the permits. Ashton, a Danville dentist, started Doc Ashton and the Root Canals 25 years ago. During winter, the jazz ensemble plays the last Sunday of the month at St. James United Methodist Church. During the summer, the group performs at Lincoln Park on Sunday evenings. I started the group because First Presbyterian Church needed entertainment for a spring women's get-together, and someone said, "Hey, can you play?" He said after Sunday afternoon's performance, I said, "Well, I don't have a band, so we put one together." That's how the original group started. 4 years later, Ashton was asked if he could get a big band together. I said, "I don't know. It wasn't any trouble since we already had the working parts. All we had to do was expand and get a few extra players." We put it together, and we've been doing it ever since. While Doc Ashton and the Root Canals had just 7 members, the big band that plays during the holidays has grown over the years. The size has swelled because now we have Northridge come in and participate with it, and we've had a few high school kids sit with us before. So it started from barely putting a band together 21 years ago and scrounging around for musicians to musicians coming forward and saying, "Hey, we're willing and we'd like to play in the band," and then the kids play along too. Ashton said he's proud of the accomplishments of the students who are learning as they play. "This gives them a good opportunity to play along with older people," he said. "They did great." Ashton is also thankful for the many musicians who give their time each year. "To be able to have a great group of talented musicians that will show up and play with very little rehearsal, we're blessed that they are willing to give their time and come and do that and show up year after year," he said. "And then the kids that come and play, this is phenomenal. We have a great time watching them do it because, like I said, number one, I hope they learn something, but number two, they show us that they're already working on their horns and doing a great job. They're doing really, really good, and it's really a lot of fun." The Christmas concerts are always free. A donation is accepted during the show for a local charity. This year, the concert raised funds for the St. James Food Pantry, which feeds 400 families a month. During the last song of the night, "We Wish You a Merry Christmas," balloons fell from the balcony of the sanctuary at the church. Young and old alike had fun batting them around as the band played on. Before the guests left Sunday evening, they were given a gift, red and green toothbrushes inscribed with "Merry Christmas." The message was clear: "Until next Christmas, may your days be merry and your teeth be bright." The next headline reads, "Yes, Virginia, there is a Santa Claus." Tomorrow morning, children will awake in great anticipation of what awaits them under the Christmas tree. There is something special about the lights of the tree and the presents that surround it on Christmas morning for old and young alike. "As we celebrate the holidays, we pray that the new year brings peace and joy to all who seek it, and that in a time when we find ourselves more divided than ever, we draw near to those we love and share the spirit of Christmas with everyone we meet." Children have many questions as they grow, but perhaps the one that weighs heavy on parents is the question an 8-year-old little girl asked the editor of the New York Sun in 1987. "Is there a Santa Claus?" There's something about that question that reminds us that childhood is fleeting, and for a moment in time, Christmas is a chance to see the magic of the season through their innocence. It's a tradition in the commercial news each Christmas season to revisit the little girl's question by publishing that famous letter to the editor. Its author, little Virginia O'Hanlon, wrote, I am 8 years old. Some of my little friends say there's no Santa Claus. My papa says if you see it in the sun, it's so. Please tell me the truth. Is there a Santa Claus? In the New York Sun editorial, Francis E. Church wrote the response to Virginia that day. His message has endured for more than a century. Virginia, your little friends are wrong. They have been affected by the skepticism of a skeptical age. They do not believe except they see. They think that nothing can be which is not comprehensible by their little minds. All minds, Virginia, whether they be men's or children's or little. In this great universe of ours, man is a mere insect, an ant, in his intellect as compared with the boundless world about him, as measured by the intelligence capable of grasping the whole of truth and knowledge. Yes, Virginia, there is a Santa Claus. He exists as certainly as love and generosity and devotion exist, and you know that they abound and give to your life the highest beauty and joy. Alas, how dreary would it be if the world if there were no Santa Claus? It would be as dreary as if there were no Virginias. There would be no childlike faith then, no poetry, no romance to make tolerable this existence. We should have not enjoyment except in sense and sight. The eternal light with which childhood fills the world would be extinguished. Not believe in Santa Claus? You might as well not believe in fairies. You might get your papa to hire men to watch in all the chimneys on Christmas Eve to catch Santa Claus. But even if they did not see him coming down, what would that prove? Nobody sees Santa Claus, but that is no sign that there is no Santa Claus. The more real things in the world are those that neither children nor men can see. Did you ever see fairies dancing on the lawn? Of course not, but that's no proof they're not there. Nobody can conceive or imagine all the wonders that are unseen and unseeable in the world. You tear apart a baby's rattle and see what makes the noise inside, but there is a veil covering the unseen world which not the strongest man, nor even the united strength of all the strongest men that ever lived, could tear apart. Only faith, fancy, poetry, love, and romance can push aside that curtain and view and picture the supernal beauty and glory beyond. Is it all real? Ah, Virginia, in all this world there is nothing else real and abiding. No Santa Claus? Thank God he lives, and he lives forever. 1,000 years from now, Virginia, nay, 10 times 10,000 years from now, he will continue to make glad the heart of childhood. Children rest easier this holiday thanks to bed donations from local business. Staff report. Some Vermilion County residents are sleeping easier this holiday season thanks to Slumberland Furniture. Several years ago, Slumberland recognized the importance of giving back to the community served by its stores and took action. A crucial need was identified, beds, because everyone deserves a good night's sleep, the company said. This inspired the creation of the company's Homes for the Holidays program. Every December, local Slumberland stores partner with a nonprofit to identify families, especially with children, who are sleeping on the floor. During December, Slumberland gifts beds to the children selected in the communities. As our stores and franchises expanded, so did the demand for assistance, Senior Store Manager Andrew Singleton said. The company began receiving calls from families inquiring whether they would have to wait until next December for a bed. Recognizing the urgency of this need, the founder knew we had to expand our efforts beyond the holiday season. This prompted the launch of the 40 Winks Foundation. With our mission, giving beds, changing lives, through this initiative, we provide new beds year-round to children in need. Singleton said this year, Slumberland stores gifted more than 2,500 beds, bringing the total for the company's Homes for the Holidays and 40 Winks Foundation's total to more than 58,000 beds donated throughout the years. We are deeply grateful to everyone who contributes, enabling us to purchase new beds and ensure that those in need can enjoy a good night's sleep. Thanks to the support of Slumberland's owners, all administrative and overhead expenses are covered, so every cent goes directly to purchasing new beds for the children. And on page 2, unfortunately, this isn't the kind of news you like to read before Christmas, but here we go. Residential arsonist sentenced to 10 years in prison. James Brayboy, 27, formerly of Hoopston, Illinois, pled guilty to residential arson, a Class 1 felony, December 17th. He will serve 10 years in the Illinois Department of Corrections. In addition, Brayboy pleaded guilty to unlawful possession of a weapon, no FOID card, a Class 3 felony. For that charge, he will serve 3 years in IDOC. Brayboy also pled guilty to criminal damage to property, a Class 4 felony, and will serve 2 years in IDOC. The sentences will run concurrently. Judge Mark S. Goodwin presided over the case. The people presented evidence that in the early morning hours of June 23rd, Hoopston police responded to a house fire on East Young Street. The homeowner told police that Brayboy had recently sent her a text message mentioning a house fire. During the investigation, officers obtained video surveillance and were able to identify Brayboy, wearing a distinctive backpack and watch, walking towards the door of the residence and then walking away as a flash of light was observed in the area of the residence. Officers noted that the front door of the residence was not usable prior to the fire and had been locked and secured with a full sheet of plywood inside the door frame. Brayboy was later located by police wearing the same distinctive backpack and watch. The arson investigator indicated that the fire had started outside the front door of the residence, probably by the use of fireworks. Officers noted that searching Brayboy's belongings, there were 5 standard lighters, 1 long wand-style lighter, and the Black Cat firecrackers found inside his backpack. The people also presented evidence that on February 21st, Hoopston police responded to a business on Lincoln Street for a report of criminal damage to 2 vehicles. Police identified Brayboy on surveillance video jumping over the fence of the property with an unidentified individual and walking up to each of the vehicles and damaging them. Officers later made contact with Brayboy and obtained consent to search his residence, where they located a hoodie and a pair of jeans that were an exact match for the clothing that Brayboy was wearing in the surveillance video. Additionally, the court heard evidence that on April 10th, Brayboy was involved in a dispute with a female when another male stopped to assist the female. Police say Brayboy then directed his anger at the male witness and threw a brick and broke the windshield of the witness's vehicle. Brayboy was later located by police, at which time he fled into a residence and hid in the basement. Brayboy was located and searched subsequent to arrest. On Brayboy's person, police located a taser. Brayboy is not eligible to receive a firearm owner identification card. State's Attorney Jacqueline Lacey thanked the Hoopston Police Department for their diligent attention to these criminal investigations. She also extended her appreciation to the Hoopston Fire Department. She added, "The reckless actions of this criminal not only violated the law, but also endangered the safety and security of our community. This sentence reflects the serious nature of his crimes, including residential arson, and serves as a reminder that such criminal behavior will not be tolerated. My office will continue to work to protect our residents." Danville Police investigate Saturday shooting. Danville police are investigating a shooting that took place Saturday, December 21st, and seeking the community's help. Saturday at approximately 11 p.m., Danville police officers were dispatched to the area of Collette and William Streets for the report of a subject lying on the ground near the intersection. Around that time, an officer heard shots being fired in the same area. Police say officers arrived to find a male subject unresponsive. Police immediately began first aid measures until EMS arrived. The victim was found to have more than one gunshot wound and was pronounced dead at the scene. The Vermilion County coroner identified the victim as 35-year-old Joseph Jones of Champaign. Little or no information has been provided to the police about the incident, and the Danville Police Department is requesting the public's assistance. If anyone has any information to provide, call the Danville Police Department at 217-431-2250 or contact the Vermilion County Crime Stoppers online at vccrimestoppers.org. Or you can use the mobile app, capital P3TIPS, or call anonymously at 217-446-TIPS, T-I-P-S. And a couple of community briefs. Westville Library to show movie. Wednesday afternoon at the movies returns to Westville Public Library, January 8th at 2 p.m. Participants will watch Reagan, starring Dennis Quaid. Light refreshments will be served. On January 8th at 10 a.m., the library will have a preschool program. The children will have story time, a craft, and snacks. Call 217-267-3170 to register. View the lights at Kennecook. The Vermilion County Conservation District invites the community to Kennecuck County Park to view the Christmas lights at the Neff Grocery Store, Altwood Home, and Print Shop. Christmas light displays will be on display through December 31st from 5 to 8 p.m. Bavard elected his 5th Judicial Circuit's Chief Circuit Judge. Coles County Circuit Judge Mark E. Bavard has been elected as the 5th Judicial Circuit's Chief Circuit Judge. The election occurred during the Circuit Judge annual meeting. He succeeds current Chief Judge Thomas O'Shaughnessy of Vermilion County, whose four-term term ends January 30, 2025. The 5th Circuit encompasses 5 counties: Clark, Coles, Cumberland, Edgar, and Vermilion. Each of Illinois' 24 judicial circuits has a chief judge who, in addition to judicial responsibilities, has general supervisory authority over the administrative functions of the trial courts within the circuit. I am very grateful and humbled to have been chosen to serve as chief judge of the 5th Judicial Circuit, Bavard said. I have been fortunate to have worked under the exemplary leadership of our recent chief judges Millard Everhart, Craig D'Armond, Mitchell Schick, and Thomas O'Shaughnessy. I look forward to working with and representing the judges and court staff of our judicial circuit, as well as the other chief judges throughout the state of Illinois. Bavard, originally from Effingham, earned his bachelor's degree from Eastern Illinois University in 1994 and his law degree from Indiana University School of Law in Bloomington in 1997. He practiced law with the Mattoon firm of Heller, Holmes & Associates for 15 years. He was appointed as an associate judge in 2012 and then elected as a circuit judge during 2018 and retained for another 6-year term in this November's general election. Serving as chief judge of the circuit has been the high point of my judicial career, Judge O'Shaughnessy said of his term. I wish to express my sincere appreciation to each of the judges and attorneys of the circuit, the court staff and personnel of all our county boards and elected and appointed officials and their staff, all of whom manage, operate, and maintain our justice system, programs, and facilities. Each of them are integral members of a remarkable, accomplished, talented, and collegial team. A team which provides an extraordinary system of justice for the citizens of our 5 counties. A team which allows the judges of the circuit to handle the legal issues before them in a fair, capable, organized, and effective manner, concerned with the equal dignity of every person, and giving everyone the right to be heard and a process they understand to be fair. It has been a privilege and an honor to have worked with all of them. DAC Foundation Scholarships applications open January 6th. Danville Area Community College Foundation will open its scholarship application for the 2025-26 academic year on Monday, January 6, 2025. The deadline to apply is Thursday, May 1, 2025. For the 24-25 award year, the foundation awarded 857 scholarships valued at more than $1 million. This marked the second year in a row that the foundation surpassed the $1 million in scholarship awards. A total of 673 applications were received, and for the 4th consecutive year, every student who applied and attended DAC received a scholarship. The DAC Foundation scholarship application streamlines the process for students by allowing them to complete just one form to be considered for all available foundation scholarships. This opportunity is open to traditional and non-traditional students, including part-time and full-time students who plan to attend DAC. First-time DAC students, recent high school graduates, adults, and current DAC students are all encouraged to apply. The application can be completed online at https://dac.edu. Scholarships. For assistance or additional information about DAC scholarships, contact Gina Davis, Scholarship Manager at 217-443-8893. The DAC Foundation is located at the Bremner Conference and Workforce Development Center on the DAC campus. The foundation is a not-for-profit organization dedicated to promoting and supporting the success of Danville Area Community College through fundraising and responsible management of its resources. The foundation believes in the college's positive educational, cultural, and economic impact on the communities it serves. In addition to Gina Davis, the foundation staff includes Executive Director Tanya Hill and Controller Office Manager Sanya Dreher, and it is governed by an independent board of directors. We have a couple of obituaries that I want to insert here. Michael A. Stevens. Michael A. Stevens, 50, of Bismarck, Illinois, passed away at OSF Sacred Heart Medical Center in Danville on December 19th. A celebration of life will be held at 10 a.m. on Saturday, December 28th, 2024, at Sunset Funeral Home and Cremation Center in Danville at 3940 North Vermilion Street in Danville. Brian Carpenter will officiate. Burial will be in the Sunset Memorial Park. Visitation will be held from 5 to 8 p.m. on Friday, December 27th, 2024, at the funeral home. Memorials may be made to a scholarship fund being set up in Mike's honor, or to the American Legion Post 210 to honor Mike's memory and his dedication to our community, country, and his love for sports. Marion Hollingsworth. Marion Dale Hollingsworth, 93, of Danville, died on Friday, December 20th. The family would like to extend special thanks to the staff at the Villas of Hollybrook in Danville and the hospice team from Transition Care of Champaign for their intention, care, and support. In lieu of flowers, donations can be made to an organization of the donor's choice. Services will be held on Monday, December 30th, at Sunset Funeral Home and Cremation Center at 215 North Division Street in Cayuga, Indiana. Visitation will be 12 noon to 2 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, with services at 2 p.m. And this editorial, Fires Spark Concerns. Danville firefighters braced cold temperatures to extinguish at least two somewhat similar serious fires in recent weeks. Gratefully, neither firefighters nor anyone else suffered injuries, but each new alarm adds to the risk. The fires, the first, December 13th, on East Seminary Street, and the second, December 16th, on Clarence Street, effectively destroyed the empty houses where they occurred. On arrival, firefighters found the buildings pretty well involved in flames. The December 13th blaze required 4 hours to put out, and the December 16th fire took 3 hours to extinguish, even after a second alarm brought in more help. The structures had been boarded shut in both cases, with no or few utilities still connected. But firefighters don't know that when they pull up to a building with flames shooting through the roof. They must conduct checks to ensure that no one is inside the burning building, a process that puts them at risk, especially in older structures. There's a possibility that the fires were caused by people without shelter trying to keep warm. Most likely the fires weren't set intentionally, but could have been rekindled after the squatters had left. With no water available, it would be difficult for those using the structures for shelter to fully extinguish their fires. The two alarms were just the latest in a series of blazes that city firefighters have faced this year. With no homeless shelters available for men in Vermilion County and precious little shelter space open for women, those who find themselves without a place to go must make do with what they can find, often an abandoned house. Breaking into an empty building, even one without utilities, at least gives them a chance to get out of the cold winter weather. Officials hope to use the $60,000 in community development block grant funds to help local groups that try to offer shelter, including the organization trying to reopen the former men's rescue mission on Bowman Avenue just south of Fairchild Street. That money will be put to good use, but it won't be near enough to solve the problem. Danville officials should consider following the lead of their counterparts in Urbana, Champaign, and Decatur in dedicating more resources to help house the homeless. Such an investment in the community not only improves the lives of those who make use of a shelter, but it reduces the chances of injury to firefighters called out to fight big fires in old houses during winter's frigid temperatures. Doing something to reduce the number of such fires also improves public safety for the neighborhood where these old, empty structures stand. It's a simple matter of priorities for those in charge of the city's purse strings. Their decisions will send a clear message to residents what the officials think is the most important. Now I want to share this article about Ricky Henderson. This is kind of an editorial, but it's really good. Ricky Henderson was about so much more than the stolen bases. When Kevin Towers was a San Diego Padres general manager, he received a voicemail delivered in a high-pitched, high-energy voice, then familiar to most baseball people. KT, it's Ricky, calling about Ricky. Ricky wants to play baseball. Ricky Henderson, in 2001, became a Padre again. His combination of talents earned him sports honorific. Like the song, Talkin' Baseball, that celebrated New York City's three 1950 center fielders, Willie, Mickey, and the Duke, Ricky's first name sufficed. He came from Oakland, an incubator of athletic excellence, including basketball's Bill Russell. He became something novel, a first ballot Hall of Famer who played for nine teams. Without today's arcane metrics, they recognized baseball value, including a high pain threshold when they saw it. Baseball fans debating the all-time best team selected three outfielders from a pantheon that includes Henry Aaron, Babe Ruth, Ty Cobb, Tris Speaker, Joe DiMaggio, Ted Williams, Dan Musial, Willie Mays, Frank Robinson, and Roberto Clemente. Only two of those ten should be in the starting lineup. Ricky should start in left field and bat first. He homered in the first inning a record 81 times. Baseball's objective is to score runs. Ricky scored more than anyone, 2,295, more than Cobb at 2,245, Aaron or Ruth, 2,170, or Mays at 2,068. When Aaron retired in 1976, he probably held the record for the most records held, but he was particularly proud of his total bases. Home runs are glorious, but the game is basically about 90-foot increments. Winning is getting enough of them. Ricky's total bases, 4,588, although more than Mantle's at 4,511, do not tell the full story. In football or basketball, an individual, a hot-handed quarterback or shooter, can take over a game. In baseball, a pitcher can dominate a game, but supposedly no batter can. Ricky could. Tie game, bottom of the ninth, he leads off. In his crouch, with a strike zone the size of a sandwich, he walks. He walked 496 more times than he struck out. He walked, leading off an inning, 796 times. Steals second. Steals third, or gets there on a ground ball to the right side of the infield. Scores on a sacrifice fly. We'll see you tomorrow night. A college football coach tired of hearing football called a contact sport said, "Dancing is a contact sport. Football is a collision sport. Those who think baseball is for the delicate have never taken a 98-mile-per-hour fastball to the ribs or done what Ricky did stealing bases." Only three players, Pete Rose, Cobb, or Barry Bonds, reached the base more often. No player made better use of being there than Ricky did. Mays led the National League in stolen bases four times, with a four-season total of 136, six more than Ricky's single-season record of 130 in 1982. His career total, 1,406 steals, is 468 more than Lou Brock's second best. He stole third, for the catcher a shorter throw than to second, 322 times. Think of leaping from a car going about 20 miles per hour, landing on your chest on a sunbaked dirt approximately 2,000 times over 25 seasons, well into middle age. No player absorbed more punishment in the pursuit of excellence. Bill James, the high priest of seamheads, baseball nerds fascinated by even more arcane metrics, said of Ricky, "If you could split him in two, you'd have two Hall of Famers. One for his 3,055 hits, 27th all-time, one for everything else." Joe Posnanski in the Baseball 100 says Ricky was born on Christmas Day in 1958 in the back seat of an Oldsmobile speeding toward the hospital. "I was already fast," he said. As an 18-year-old in Modesto, California, he stole seven in one game. He stole his last in the major leagues at 44. Because of Ricky's eccentricities, for example, he framed a $1 million bonus check. Think about that. He was caricatured as an athletically gifted child. The cerebral Tony La Russa, who won more games than any manager not named Connie Mack, and who managed Ricky and against him, remembers him even more for his baseball IQ than for his legs. Ricky died the day before December 21st, the shortest day, with the least amount of sunlight, the beginning of winter. To baseball fans, however, it is the beginning of the end of something awful, the off-season. 45 seasons ago, Ricky began playing Major League Baseball in a way, his wanting as well as his playing, no one else has. And that was written by George Will. And I appreciate that, hearing about an athlete from the past. And I think we'll call that a day. It is Christmas Eve, and I hope you have a good day today and enjoy the Christmas day tomorrow. We will be back with our regular programming on Thursday. I hope you enjoy the Christmas programming that we're offering you next week, tomorrow. This is Kathy saying Merry Christmas.